Listen to the voices of our world.
We have images in the film of these upper middle class women attacking bank machines with knives because they cannot believe that they can't get their money out. Debt is one of the greatest forms of social control in the world.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm Eileen Bott. What would you do if you couldn't take money out of the bank? And I mean, you couldn't use an ATM. Your check would bounce, and your credit card was worthless. All the banks claim that they have nothing, but you know that there's money in the account because you deposited your paycheck just the other day. This goes on for days, then weeks, and your friends don't have money either. Food runs out, but bills keep on coming. Sounds like a good sci-fi movie, right? But in 2001, this actually happened to people in Argentina. Naomi Klein and Abby Lewis flew to Argentina to document people's reactions and actions. We'll speak with Naomi Klein about the documentary called The Take. Remember the blackout? Darkness. But most people banded together to eat the contents of their fridges before they would spoil. People offered strangers places to sleep. They were kind. Remember how quiet it was? And how the stars popped out, even in the city? So we didn't have power for a day or two. A bit of a hassle and a great story for the grandchildren. But we didn't have to experience darkness or hunger because the entire country went belly up. Gold was flown out of Argentina. Thousands of people lost their jobs. Factories shut down. No one got paid because there was nothing to pay them with. And people's life savings vanished overnight, just like what happened to the folks at Enron. But unlike here, Argentinians were not willing to wait for years while their suits were filed in court. They were just completely fed up with the economic policies that dropped them back into third world poverty. They took to the streets with pots and pans and told the entire government to get out. People decided that not having a job was not an option. So they just marched right back into their factories and started up the machines again. They formed democratically run cooperatives, recreated relationships with suppliers and vendors, and worked through the courts to own factories collectively. Naomi Klein is co-producer of The Take and author of the highly acclaimed book about branding, marketing, and economics called No Logo. Eleanor Ostrinsky spoke with Naomi Klein about her work.
The work that I do is mostly around defending the public sphere. And really, that's what No Logo was about. You know, it wasn't a book against advertising. It was a book against the privatization of every aspect of our life and the enclosure of our lives by marketing. I've certainly continued that project, which I think is a lifelong project of defending the idea that there are values that are non-commercial values. And we ended up in Argentina because Argentina was the most privatized country I've ever seen, because they followed the economic recipe of the International Monetary Fund to the letter. Everything in Argentina has been sold, privatized, commercialized. Even the zoo and the street signs are all sponsored. And the neocons or the neoliberals or whatever you want to call them would always hold up Argentina as an example of a developing country that made good, that followed the policies and had all this economic growth, 60% growth in the 90s. And then they experienced this economic crash in December 2001. And to me, it seems to be a very powerful indictment of these policies. If the model student declared bankruptcy, the largest sovereign debt default in world history, and we decided to go to Argentina, not to chronicle the collapse of the economy, but to look at the alternatives that emerged really in the rubble of this failed system. And we'd heard rumors that there was this explosion of participatory democracy because people had lost faith, not just in these economic policies, but they'd also lost faith in representative democracy as it was constructed in that country, because they were electing governments that were running on populist platforms and promising, you know, jobs and the rest of it. And they were getting these programs of severe austerity, massive layoffs. So it just seemed like no matter who they elected, they were getting the same policies, which is a familiar feeling around the world. And it was the way Argentina's government collapsed that really captured my imagination, because it was not a revolution, although it looked like one on TV. I mean, which is to say that there were millions of people storming the seat of government. This is December 19th and 20th, 2001. Millions of people on the streets of Buenos Aires was banging pots and pans, going to the president's palace, who then has to escape Fernando de la Rúa in a helicopter. And they went through five presidents in 3 weeks. And no matter who they put in, they said, que se vayan todos, let them all be gone. And they said the same thing to the Supreme Court, and they said the same thing to Congress. But at the same time, they didn't have their politician who they wanted to replace them with. So it was this really interesting political vacuum, because it meant that people had to look to each other instead of waiting for a political savior. And it was really remarkable to be there in that moment. And we just thought, okay, whatever comes out of this moment, we want to be filming it. And the other remarkable thing that was happening is that cameras were leaving in droves, because this was the start of the war in Afghanistan and then later the war in Iraq. And sort of there was this feeling of, wow, empire is distracted. And because of that, there's all of these incredible experiments that are going on at a very grassroots level that are being left alone. I mean, there was some state repression, but nothing in the way that that country certainly suffered in the 70s and 80s.
I want to back up a little bit. And would you give us a bit of a history of how Argentina was this fantastic student of this of these economic policies set by the IMF, and what had happened?
Well, the International Monetary Fund primarily exists to loan money and set conditions for loans, which is why it is a political organization as well as a financial organization. And there is a set of policies that in Latin America it's called neoliberalism. Sometimes it's called the Washington Consensus, because these institutions are based in Washington, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. And there emerged a consensus in the 80s about the way countries must develop. And these policies were that if they have much of their economy controlled by the state, they have to privatize. And most importantly, they need to become more export-oriented rather than developing national economies, which was more the thinking, you know, in Argentina in the time of Juan Perón. He spent a lot of money building infrastructure, and it was a protectionist economy geared towards subsidizing national industry and developing a consumer base in that country. So it was largely self-sufficient. And Argentina was transformed from a nationalist economy to a neoliberal economy with great violence, because Peronism was unseated through a military coup in 1976. And the generals, who were very close to Henry Kissinger and the CIA, immediately attacked the trade union movement, which was so key to demanding high wages so that there would be the consumer base to buy the goods that are made in the factory. Basically, it's Fordism. I mean, that's what Peronism was. It's the same principles that built the American economies, and the same idea that, you know, a Ford auto worker should be able to buy the car he's making. Peronism had lots of problems, was quasi-fascist and provided shelter to the Nazis. But on economics, it was straight Fordism. And that's what was dismantled by the military junta. The first thing they did is they went after the union organizers. 30,000 people were disappeared, not even killed in the open, but disappeared so that their, you know, families didn't even know if they were alive or dead, and the bodies would wash ashore. Once the military junta collapsed, for a variety of reasons, some of it was human rights activism, like the incredible Mothers of the Plaza de Mayo building international pressure. The other issue was just the Falklands War, the Malvinas War, which ended up being a disaster. And the junta was not overthrown, but it collapsed. And it's important that they weren't overthrown, because they managed to get impunity for themselves. And they also managed to make some backroom deals so that while Argentinians were given freedom to vote and freedom of movement and certain basic human rights, they were never actually given freedom over their economy, in the sense that certain key people from the military dictatorship, head of the central bank, the finance minister, stayed in place. So the economic project of the military dictatorship was passed on under democracy, the most significant of which was passing on the debt that the junta had accumulated with massive loans from the International Monetary Fund, from the Export-Import Bank in the United States, from the World Bank. And they used these loans to buy weapons to use against their own people. They put a lot of it in Swiss bank accounts. It was a debt knowingly given to a murderous regime. And now there are transcripts of conversations between Kissinger and the finance minister and the foreign minister, making it clear that when they were giving loans, they were aware of what Kissinger referred to as the human rights problem. And in this transition from dictatorship to democracy, Argentinians had to inherit the odious debts of their dictator. And ever since, they have been in this spiral. So no matter who they elect, they still end up with the International Monetary Fund able to set policies and impose ever greater austerity measures and demand more and more privatizations. So the most brutal of the structural adjustments actually happened under Carlos Menem, who was responsible for these massive layoffs of hundreds of thousands of workers as he privatized the economy.
Can you describe what you saw when you got to Argentina? What impressed you in that way?
Well, when I got to Argentina, I guess what struck me most is how modern Buenos Aires was, because I hadn't been there before. And it's an enormously cultured cosmopolitan city. But on top of that, it also is completely branded corporate city, you know, with absolutely every franchise present and accounted for. And but what was shocking about it was that it was in a state of total chaos and under siege. The banks, when I arrived in Buenos Aires, were completely encased in steel. One of the tenets of free trade is that money should be free to travel, and you know, whether that means, you know, a factory can shut down and easily move somewhere else and set up, or whether it means that investors can just take their money out easily without facing any barriers or any conditions and so on. Argentina adopted all of these policies, and when their economy started to tank, the money just left. Literally $40 billion in cash in Brinks trucks flew to American Airlines jets and flew literally out of the country. And the government panicked. And the only thing the government could think to do to stop the hemorrhaging was impose what they called the corralito, which means the little gate. And it was not a little gate. All Argentinians who had money in the bank could not access their bank account. And these were banks like Citibank, HSBC, Barclays, all the big names. And it was an incredible sight to see this betrayal of the promise of capitalism. You know, we are an international branded bank. If you put your money with us, you'll be safe. And we have images in the film of these, you know, upper middle class women, sort of highly plastic surgerized, attacking bank machines with knives, just stabbing them because they cannot believe that they can't get their money out. So there was a tremendous loss of faith in capitalism. The other promise that was broken is the promise of development. If you do certain things right, you will develop and you will sort of climb from the third world to the first. And Argentina believed that it had climbed out of the third world. And so really what was happening was the ultimate middle class fear, which is the fear of no longer being middle class anymore. And that was happening to an entire country. And people were furious. The other issue is that they weren't saved. The U.S. did not intervene, in fact, made sure that the IMF did not bail Argentina out, so they were left to default. And I think that that had to do with the fact that there is a battle, an inter-imperial battle going on between the European Union and the United States.
What would you do if your money disappeared? Email us. Go to www.marynoll.org/voices. Just choose the Contact Us button. Or you can call us at 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARY-KNOLL.